thinking is hard. This is the sucky part. This is the part that you're not going to want to do because it's hard work. Like, you have to actually kind of dig in. It's the exact kind of part that you're going to want to skip over and do other things. Hey everyone, and welcome back to Interview Boss. My name is Emma. I'm a radio journalist who's teamed up with my sister to give you advice, inspiration, and support when you're looking for a new job. Sarah is a HR and recruitment professional, and together we're excited to give you all the tips, tricks, and behind-the-scenes knowledge to help you in your career. Hey Em, and welcome back everyone. Em, it's been a little while since we last hit record. I kind of got a little bit sick on my visit back to Australia. So I apologize for my voice. I feel like I still sound a little bit nasally. But all of that aside, it is time for our favorite part of the podcast, our Shoot Your Shot shout out. We are celebrating you guys, our incredible listeners. You've gone out there, you've shot your shot, and you're reporting back to us. Em, this week we're shouting out Christina. She very kindly bought us 3 coffees to support the show. What did she say?
Yes, she said, "Hi, Emma and Sarah. I just wanted to take a moment to say a heartfelt thank you. A week before my big internal interview, I was feeling incredibly stressed and insecure, especially knowing I'd be going up against 3 colleagues. Your episodes on internal interviews really gave me the boost I needed. I committed myself to reviewing as much of your content as I could, and within 24 hours after my interview, I got the call. I was the successful candidate. My first thought was, thank you, Emma and Sarah. Your work gave me the clarity, confidence, and calm I needed to show up as my best self. And thank goodness I didn't slip into an Aussie accent and say double plugger during the interview. I'm so grateful for the impact you've had on my journey. Thank you again for everything you do."
I love this so much, and I have no idea where Christina is from. Maybe the US, maybe? I don't know.
Possibly.
She could be from anywhere. I love that, and I kind of wish that she did say double plugger in her interview. They would have been really, really confused, and there would have been a whole backstory to explain.
For those that aren't up to date on the double plugger law, go and listen to our interview about really convoluted, long interview questions, triple barrel, double barrel. We ended up dubbing it the double plugger.
Yep, or the triple plugger. Now, if you want results like Christina, but you need a little bit more help, maybe you're a little bit more stuck and you want some personalized help, you can book in a session with me. I meet with people all around the world, plenty of different time zones and options. You can go and actually see which are available. You actually choose your exact time slot when you book in your thing, that you don't have to email back and forth. You can just literally book it in right now. Or maybe you're interested in Interview Academy. That is everything, more than I can cover with you in a coaching call. You get all of the greatest, best advice in video format, in activities, in downloadable hints and tricks and guides. interviewboss.com.au/coaching, and you can compare to see which one is right for you.
And you get lifetime access, which is a plus. As always, if you liked one of our episodes, used a tip that we sent you, or want to request an episode specifically on your conundrum or industry, kindly follow us on Instagram, slide into our DMs, and we could dedicate a whole episode to you. I have been replying to some DMs lately, and it's been a lot of fun. So we can't always guarantee a reply, but when we do, it's a lot of fun.
Yeah. And look, every DM that needs a reply is typically quite an involved reply. So I kind of figure it's nicer to do a couple of involved replies rather than like just being like, oh, sorry, we can't get to you to everyone. You know, like some people really get like a full detailed insight. Now, this episode, however, is one of those, it's not what you asked for, but it's what you need. This comes from the coaching calls that I do with people all the time. And it's an insight that I have been wanting to share for quite a while now, but it's something that I felt like I'm not very good at explaining it. Even when I was telling it to coaching clients, I'm like, this is what you need to work on. It was almost hard for me to come up with the words. And I think I've gotten so much more clarity on how to explain it. So it's this: you need to do more thinking time. That's the place that you should spend the most effort and energy in your interview prep. I see people a lot who've spent time working on their structure, which is great. They've spent time researching, which is great. They've come up with some best bits, which is also amazing. That's the interview boss way, but they're doing more practicing and it's not making their answers any better. what they actually need to do and what they've kind of maybe skipped, if this is you, is the thinking time. That's the part that's going to change the game for your answers. This is for like your interview answers for different questions, but it's also for your career story, like your intro, your tell me about yourself. It's also for that as well. So it's kind of like the technique isn't missing. They're doing the situation, the what I did and the result. It's that there's not enough depth. Things sound a bit surface level. They sound a bit flat. Their answers for these, what I can tell is like such a cool example. It's not hitting as deeply as it should be hitting. So I know that it's good and I know that it's better than what they're saying, but they're not doing themselves justice. And it's because of the thinking time.
I know personally that I've had interviews before where I've prepared the best bits and like quite comprehensively, I'd say. It's not as if I skimmed over that, but then I do shift into practice mode and I'm listening to them back. I'm getting my partner to quiz me on them. I'm like basically committing it to memory and I'm doing a good job of making sure I'm not reciting and talking like a robot. But the fear is still so large of forgetting my stories that I want to desperately not forget them. But then I've gotten into interviews before and they've asked something and I've kind of gone, I wish I had thought about that, because it's not by any means a curly question. It's like, oh, that makes sense in the context of this job, but I kind of hadn't focused on it. So I can totally see what you mean, how more thinking time to think about a broader net of possibilities would do you justice.
Even within your stories as well. So it's thinking time like for each individual example, but also, like you say, about the job, also thinking time about your career story and your reflection. So deep reflection to me brings out the richness and the uniqueness in your examples. A quick brainstorm of like what happened in that story, you're just pulling from a bit of surface level memory. It's not until you dig deeper that you kind of remember, oh, that's right, that happened. Or you even kind of think about, wait, what am I trying to say here? Like, yeah, I did this project, but what was the interesting part? What is the thing that was the most unique about it? Why am I telling this story? Like, what's the topic that I'm getting across? Or what's the thing that it kind of says about me? Why do I even like it? Like, those things I think we don't tend to interrogate. And I think without it, you could be missing key parts of the stories that you're telling. There's so many times that I go in a coaching session and someone's given me their first version and I say to them, okay, so I'm going to give you some feedback later, but first I just want to ask you some questions about the actual story, not interview mode anymore. Like, let's just chat you and I. Hey, how many people were in that team that you had to run that training for? Oh, it was actually like 100 people. Oh, wow. Okay. Well, you didn't say that at all. And I kind of was imagining 5. And they haven't mentioned those things. And that doesn't sound that deep, but it's a, I guess, symptom of the fact that you've kind of gone, here's the story, and moved on to the next thing. Like, what would have happened if you didn't do this intervention that you did? What would the consequence have been? What was the situation like before? Why was it important in the first place? Who else cared about it? These things that we don't check in on could really be a game changer for your interview answers. So I came across this quote a little while ago, and I think this kind of captures the way that even I feel about it. Thinking is hard. This is the sucky part. This is the part that you're not going to want to do because it's hard work. Like, you have to actually kind of dig in. It's the exact kind of part that you're going to want to skip over and do other things, because practice, straightforward. It doesn't hurt like thinking does. And there's this quote from Henry Ford that says, "Thinking is the hardest work there is, which is the probable reason why so few engage in it."
So true.
It's hard work.
I do this personally all the time. Whenever I'm writing an article, I'm a freelance writer on the side, and the way I write, I'm not a brain dumper. I write a word and a sentence and it comes out perfectly. I don't write something until it's exactly, I don't proofread. It comes out the exact way it's going to, and I do all the thinking upstairs. But at the start of the article, I dread it because It's probably 2-3 hours before I've got a single bloody word on the page because I'm doing mental gymnastics. How do I want this to sound? What's the angle? What should I put first? I'm categorizing. But as soon as it's done and I've got my plan, I'm flowing. I'm in flow state. The words are flowing on the page, but I always dread starting.
And do you think that you're going to suddenly like get halfway and just forget what you were going to say? No, because you've spent so much time deciding how you're going to go about it as if you would ever forget. Like you've fully cracked the nut. Does that make sense? Like that was such a good example you gave, and we didn't even prep this beforehand for Emma to talk about her writing. I think writing is such a good analogy. The one that I kind of had in my mind to maybe tell was like if you were writing a book and you came up with an idea for a set of characters and a bit of a story and you just started writing chapter one, like you would think and plan and just reflect so much more before you ever got to the writing part. And I think people skip this a lot, and it just is a game changer.
From a dopamine perspective, I dread the thinking because you can't see anything. Your partner's going, how's it going? And I'm like, oh, I'm still thinking. And it feels like you're not making progress. You've got nothing to show for it.
It also feels like it's not productive as well. It feels unproductive, and it feels like I should be able to just skip this part. And also, I appreciate that you can kind of get stuck there as well. So I want to kind of call that out. We don't want to get stuck in the thinking mode forever. You still need to do the structuring work and the practice and the whatever. I just think most people are doing that stuff and skipping this because it's hard, because it's uncomfortable, because you have to actually remember that project from 4 years ago and think about it. Like, it's not fun and it's effortful. So I wanted to give a bit of an example between surface prep and deep prep.
Tell me the difference between surface level thinking and the actual deep thinking.
Yeah. So in the context of a job interview, the surface prep is you come up with a story and you jot down a couple of bullet points, consulted with the stakeholders, delivered the project, blah, blah, blah. Like there can be quite a lot of bullet points as well. Like I'm not saying here that we're just not giving enough detail. There's often a lot of detail. Like the answers are long enough, but we've skipped the deep prep. And the deep prep to me is we start with brainstorming all of my ideas for story topics. And then after we've got them all out of our system, we can pick the ones that are actually good and that are our favorites. Those are the ones we're going to workshop a little bit more deeply. And so say I pick one and I go, this is my favorite project. This is my favorite story about a meeting I had to run. This is my favorite training that I've done. I need to think deeply about that example. So what happened afterwards? What happened beforehand? Why was it important? Is there anything special about it that made it memorable? Like, why do you like talking about it? Why is it your favorite example? Like, those are the things that kind of help you get all the details out before you then choose what to put in your story. Does that kind of make sense? Like, otherwise you've just kind of written the story and you're just kind of telling it as if it was a series of facts, as opposed to like, what's the key here? What's the message? Like, I often ask people, like, what's the story? And it's like what you were saying, like, what's the angle? If you've recorded an interview with someone and you've asked them some questions, sure, you can just write down, I asked them this, they said that. I asked them that, they said that. But that's not how you write your articles. You have to work out what's the angle, what was the overall message of this person that they were delivering, and how am I going to tackle this story? That's kind of the part that you want to come up with for your story.
And this is hard. I know when I'm thinking of like my best bits or my achievements, you know, the so what part, the powerful, hard-hitting part. Whenever I ask myself that, I'm like, I don't know, because it's just important. It's part of the job. Like, it's easy to just brush it off. So I actually use ChatGPT and I'll tell it, ask me a series of questions to prompt me to go deeper about why it mattered. And it really helps. And then it'll ask you things like, well, what would have happened if it didn't go this way? Or what would this person have said? And it helps you see the bigger picture.
Yes, yes. Now, I was going to suggest that this is exactly the kind of thing that you're going to want to outsource completely to AI. Again, here we love ChatGPT. We love AI, generative AI, large language models. Use it by all means, but use it as a tool. You are still going to have to think. If you get it to ask you all those questions and you answer all those questions to it back, guess what it's going to do? It's smart, but it's not that smart. It's going to put them all in there or put too many of the reasons in there. Like maybe your answer to, you know, what would have happened if you didn't intervene? Oh, well, nothing really would have happened. It's going to friggin' include that. Now, whilst this wasn't urgent and nothing would have happened, like as if you would include that. So does that make sense? Like you really, really need to reflect and think and be like, no, that's not relevant. No, it doesn't matter who else was involved. This is the key part of the story that I want to focus on, or this is the thing that makes it interesting. We're looking for those aha moments. Does this all make sense? Because I feel like this is a very high level kind of an episode, but I see this so often, truly. Career stories. This is like the number one thing that I end up working with people on in a coaching session. Reflecting, thinking, why did you like that job? Why did you leave there? What was so good about it? You say you want a job that was kind of like that. Why did you like that so much? Why did you like the team there? What was it about the work that kept you there for so long? Like, what did you learn from there? Like, you've kind of come to this point in your career. What did you get? What do you still take away from that first job you ever had? Did it give you good foundations? Did it set you up for a real respect for regulation? Like, whatever. These are the things that I think people don't find out. And as soon as you spend a little bit of time on it, it just pays off so much. So, so, so much.
I really wish we could outsource the thinking or plug our brain in somewhere else and do that, but we're not quite there yet.
And it's the hardest part for me to be able to help someone with. Like, obviously I do, but I can only ask them questions and prompt them. And sometimes they look at me blankly like, I don't know what you're asking that for. Like, no, that wasn't relevant. But I can't remember it for you. I can't go in there and work out what was important. I don't know. It's something that only you can do yourself. And even if you use AI, if you use me as a sounding board as well, you're going to have to do some thinking work yourself.
Interview Academy might be the perfect thing you're looking for. Interview Academy is a course Sarah has been working on after delivering hundreds of interview coaching sessions and getting incredible results.
But unfortunately, I'm only one gal living in an Aussie time zone who works a day job, and all of that mean I can't help everyone one-on-one, which drove me crazy.
So for over a year, Sarah's been working on turning all of those amazing lessons into an on-demand, step-by-step interview prep course. We hold your hand through the entire thing.
And you can do it at home in your own time and get instant access right now. Check it out at interviewboss.com.au/interview-academy. The link is in the show notes.
So to make this a little bit more practical, because we love practicality around here, you should know that by now if you're listening to us, we have some questions that you can ask yourself when you're thinking about, hey, this is your biggest best bit. I want you to think about it in your head now, one of the stories that you've been using or your career story.
Let me bring up one of mine so that I can actually kind of do this live.
Yeah, great. Now, before we go into this, I want to add a disclaimer. You do not and you should not cover every single one of these questions in your answer. This isn't like your answer should cover all this stuff. Some of these might not be relevant to the story whatsoever, but our goal is that when we go through them all, we work out maybe one of them or two of them give us a bit of an aha moment to say, hey, this really gets at something important and I previously wasn't including that in my story. So that's our goal here, is to kind of sort through. We're kind of like mining for gold, if that makes sense. Like we're going through all these different bits and pieces of detail. They're not all going to make it into the final thing, but we're looking for like, oh, I had forgotten about that. And yeah, that actually is the whole reason we need to talk about this.
All right. I've pulled up my best bit so that I can think about these questions in real time. Should I share a bit about what my best bit is?
Yep. Give us like a couple of sentence summary of what it is.
Okay. So during the recent federal election, I noticed that there was some apathy around having to vote again. People were like, oh, I didn't even know the election was on. Oh, who's even running? People were not engaged. So I pitched to my content director, to the announcers and social media team that I do a bit of a campaign to get people on board.
Taking an active role in their voting.
Yeah.
And for context for our international listeners, Australia is a bit unique in this way because we have mandatory voting for every Australian citizen. They have to vote. So it's not a matter of getting people to vote. It's getting people to take their vote seriously, or to engage in their decision making of their vote and not just to vote for who someone said they should or something like that, like to get involved.
We also have a system of preferential voting, which is very different to the US, where it's kind of like Trump or Kamala and that's it. Minor parties really don't have any weight.
If the person you voted for doesn't make it, your vote just went to them and it just died after that.
Whereas because of preferential voting, every vote does count. You number them in order of, say, 1 to 7. 1 is who you really want, 7's who you definitely don't want. And if the person you put first doesn't get in, then they'll look at your second vote and then they'll allocate that and it keeps going down the line. So there is no such thing as a wasted vote. But despite this, that rhetoric still circulates online. And a lot of people will say things like, oh, there's no point voting for the Greens or the Independents because they won't get in. They're not the two major parties. And that's just incorrect. So with all of this in mind, I pitched to all the top dogs, hey, let's do a 3-part campaign where each day of the election week, I went in and did a little segment on air. So the first segment that I did was outlining the major parties and their priorities, their election commitments for the region. The next day I went in and I recommended 3 websites that everyone can go and look up if they're not sure. They were reputable. It was like Build a Ballot, things like that. They Vote for You.
Yeah. Government or other independent type websites. Yeah. No agendas involved. They're just kind of education materials for people to find out their own stance.
Then on the third day, I did a preferential voting explainer.
It is something that's a bit complex. Like I'd say a lot of people wouldn't be able to explain it themselves.
Yeah.
Like they kind of understand, but they wouldn't be able to explain it. So yeah, it is something that people need refreshers on.
I explained it by using an analogy of our Illawarra Hawks basketball team. They're our NBL side, the National Basketball League of Australia. And I was like, everyone is big basketball fans in the region. So I was like, all right, say you're voting for Tyler Harvey. Like I named the players, and taking politicians out of it just made so much sense to people. They can imagine who's the most popular Hawks player, who's, you know, the new guy that no one really knows. So I did that. It was a great success. We had lots of great feedback. People said it was the first time they ever understood preferential voting. We also filmed it for social media, and the social media gal put some epic little graphics up. She made like a fake ballad. It was really cute. So yeah, that was great. That was initiated by me and it was a good best bit.
That's your best bit. Great. So that's an awesome example. Now, let's go through some of these questions. So as you are listening along, I want you to have your best bit in mind and to ask yourself these questions as well. Remember, we're looking for a bit of an aha moment. Some of these you're going to be like, eh, maybe not. So why did this situation matter in the first place?
Oh, well, it's the federal election. It matters who's running our country a lot.
It's coming up. It's the timing.
Yes.
It's the timing, right? Like it mattered because of the timing and also because of the voting systems that we have and what you understood about
public sentiment at the time.
Yeah, that's right. What people were saying. Yep. Who cared about the outcome and why?
Well, I cared because I'm a journalist and I want people to be informed and engaged.
Okay. See, that's an example of a bit of a first level answer. That's your first inclination. Like that's your first thought. Cool. Go deeper. Who else?
Well, I think the general public does care. This is hard because obviously the people who didn't care weren't caring. But I think there was a lot of people out there that just didn't, maybe a time poor, were too busy. It felt too complex for them to engage in the past. So the camp of people that wanted to know more but just didn't know where to start, well, they cared.
Yep. And also local people, right? Because you were putting all of this stuff that you're talking about, you're putting it in a local context. So maybe there'd been explainers done, but they didn't use a local lens of talking about the local candidates and also using a local analogy. What would have happened if things continued the way they had been before you did your explainer?
Well, the world would have kept spinning. Unfortunately.
That's right.
But
yeah.
There would have been a lot more people that were disengaged, that did a donkey vote, maybe voted in a way that was misguided to how they actually aligned. And I think that is the biggest miscarriage of justice.
There you go. Do you feel the aha moment?
Yeah.
That's the aha moment. It's like, that's the biggest thing. It's not just to get more people engaged in the blah, blah, blah. It's like people may have been voting in a way that didn't align with their own beliefs.
Yeah.
And you are enabling them to have that knowledge to enable them to line those things up.
Not everyone has good media literacy, which kills me. Very sad. And Yeah, the thought that they could have just seen a couple of headlines from a candidate and think, oh, yeah, they sound good, but they haven't actually looked into the history of what that person has historically voted against in their lifetime, and they're giving a vote away that doesn't actually represent them.
Yep, and there's those websites that you would have directed people to that are just, again, independent websites. They're not kind of pushing any particular agenda. It's just like, this person has voted for these things in Parliament. If that aligns with what you believe in, great. If it doesn't, then do you want to vote for that person? Like, it's just a very factual kind of comparison. And I'm hoping people who are listening who aren't familiar with our political system can kind of understand how neutral political debates can be in Australia. It can be just very like, what do we believe in? Like, what do I want to do? Like, it's up for decision each time an election comes around. There's a lot of people who kind of sit in the middle who don't necessarily know what they want to do with their vote. Okay, so next question. What was challenging or complex or sensitive about this situation?
Challenging, trying not to bore people to death, being in commercial radio, yeah. It's fun. It's meant to be engaging. So you don't want people to immediately just turn the radio down once you start yapping about politics, but also complex and sensitive. Well, the policies that I was outlining from either side, some of them were complex, like different energy policies and, you know, local pledges, things like that. Yeah. There's always political controversy involved.
Okay, cool. So that one, potentially not as much gold there in terms of asking that question. Was there anything you did differently to others who'd been in that situation in the past or who could have been in that situation?
Well, yeah, I mean, I would have been still doing my job and doing it great if my political reporting was just contained to my bulletins. Plenty of other journalists before me would have just reported on it within the bulletin, and we would include stories like, you know, remember to vote, and we would do that, but within the bulletin. So yeah, I guess in that sense, this was going on to the regular airwaves.
So you were going outside of your kind of strict, you know, what you have to do in your role to say, hey, I think this is something that could really add value to our listeners. Okay, cool. What options or choices did you weigh up?
Well, I had to keep it simple with the policy outlines. Obviously, there are 100 different categories, women's health, like medical, transport. There was too many. So I really just had to keep it big and broad with like health, housing, education, like very broad umbrellas. So with that came a lack of nuance, but that was a good trade-off so that it kept engaging.
For the medium. Yep.
Yeah, I just knew the analogy had to be local. It had to be fun. Otherwise, using candidates, people tune out.
Yeah. Or then it gets political.
Yeah, because it seems like whoever I said first, even though I'm using that as an example.
Yeah. 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 You'd have to make up fake candidates or something like that. Now, did you make trade-offs, and why were they the trade-offs that you chose? You kind of touched on that a little bit already, actually, of you chose a lack of nuance over keeping it very simple and straightforward when it came to talking about the different policies of the different parties.
If I got bogged down in the nuance and detail too much, it just wouldn't land. So of course, if you were like a print journalist studying my campaign, you'd be like, well, you didn't mention this and you didn't mention this, but there was no time for that. Radio is a fast, sharp medium. You're catching people on the way to work. Their ears are pricking up.
And you're trying to direct them to somewhere else to get more information, right? Like the research continues somewhere else. Yeah. What happened because of your actions? Again, we've kind of touched on that a little bit, but I'm interested for you to go deeper on that.
We got lots of feedback via messages. I think The Reel got about 1,600 views on Instagram and Facebook. Even colleagues in the tea room were coming in and going, oh my God, biggest light bulb when you were saying that this morning. I've never understood that. That was so good. And I was like, really? I'm so glad to hear that. And they're like, yes, like seriously, I had never understood. So yeah, really great feedback.
That is really cool. Feedback is a really cool one because you kind of already touched on like the segments did well and whatever, but the colleagues coming up to you as well, like that's an extra element that we hadn't already talked about so far. Like you definitely wouldn't have come up with that in your first draft of that answer. Was there a longer term effect beyond the immediate result? So obviously the result is people listened, they sent in feedback, people watched it online, whatever. Will you do that again next election with the radio? Like, does that kind of make sense? Have people said, that was really good. Let's do that kind of like informational thing again in the future. Or have you taken that same strategy for a different topic completely?
This is hard because it's kind of a one-way medium. Like the people can't really talk back to us. So yeah, I haven't kind of had seen long-term effects. I can't pull any data of like...
Don't worry about the long-term effects of people voting. Ignore that. This is where we're thinking deeper about the example. It's not the effect... Like your whole story is not about the effects of people voting. That's part of it. But what about the effects of... Have you done initiatives like that, explainers like that, since you did this voting one? Like, has it given you a bit of an idea to be like, hey, what other topics might be interesting to do in that format? Or has your colleague said, oh, we should do that again. We should run a similar kind of explainer again next time that people have to vote.
Not really. I mean, we definitely will do it again. It's great. And I had done it in the past whenever there was massive news, like a complex local issue. So I had done it before. This was definitely like the funnest. So yeah, we will do it again, but no conversations on that.
Yeah, so maybe not any ongoing kind of thing. That's totally fine. There's not always an outcome when we're asking ourselves these questions. What does this example say about the kind of employee you are? And you can ask yourself, or what kind of leader you are if you were leading a team?
Well, I have initiative and I go to great lengths in service of my people, my listeners, because that's my job. And I spend a lot of time preparing after work and, you know, researching, and I really wanted to present it in the perfect way. So yeah, dedicated, collaborated to like getting it to be filmed and put on social media.
Yep. Working with other departments. Yep. True. That is very good. And then why does this example still stick in your mind? What is it about it that made you go, yep, this is my favorite one?
I think because it's a little bit funny, like there's kind of some humor in there. Like I get to talk about a local basketball team, you know, I just feel like that's lighthearted and it's the kind of story that makes people smile in an interview.
Tell me about the funny part. Like what was funny about the basketball part?
Well, the basketball player that I said first and then that I voted for first and then I listed, you know, second and third. And then I was like, right, my person, he came dead last. He tanked in the polls. So now my second vote goes to blah. And so it was, there was naturally humor built in.
Right. And who did you pick? Were they like a famous player or something?
Yeah. Yeah. Famous, well-known. I think it was like our co-captain.
And you're like, he didn't do well. He's, yeah.
Yeah.
And then the announcers. Which is funny inherently. Yeah.
And then the announcers were like, oh, well, now we know who your favorites are. Because obviously the hierarchy that I'd ranked them, and it was just naturally humorous. And I think I enjoy that about it. But also it's kind of like not my only one, but one of my only proper examples of like, to use the buzzwords, a media campaign or something like that. Because when I'm writing stories every day, I guess it's mini campaigns, but I'm just like making a decision and doing it instantly. It's very instant and just reactive. This was proactive.
And you're not kind of foreplanning what you're going to cover on what days. Yeah, it's like a longer format version of a story where you're going in deeper. See how the humor part, we didn't really uncover that until the end. Like I kind of know your flavor of how you create things. And so I kind of had a hunch of when you were saying, oh, it was lighthearted or whatever. But if I was an interviewer and I didn't really know you very well, I would not have known that you liked it because it was, you used humor.
That's very true. I didn't say that it used humor.
Yes. That's right. And you said, oh, it's lighthearted because I used a basketball example. It still could have been very stiff with a basketball example. Like it still could have been very much like, so if we were voting for our favorite player and I voted for this one and you voted for that one, like it still could have been very bland and dry. You haven't mentioned that humor. So see how that question got you to uncover. It's the funniness. It's the energy in there. It's, you know, the banter that ensued to make it an engaging conversation to listen to on air, because the hosts are then able to say, or the announcers are then able to say, oh, do you like this person? Do you? Oh, really? And there's stuff to keep people interested while you're giving them the important information. You missed that point when you first kind of delivered the example. So does that make sense? How asking these questions and just reflecting a little bit more, why is this really important? What are you actually getting at here? I think the two things that we really uncovered are this means something because of the timing. You've kind of picked up on this being a need. And the biggest game changer for you, the reason why it feels meaningful is not that just like, oh, I understand something that I didn't understand before. It's I can now vote in accordance with what I actually believe because I have a tiny bit more information. That's the game changer for the listeners. And that's kind of regardless of whatever they do believe or whoever they did vote for. It's like everyone got that benefit if they were in that situation. And you did it in a way that was brand aligned and it was funny and lighthearted and whatever. And it was something you were able to work on a bit longer term.
Especially because the news is so often dry, heavy, boring, serious. I think I do pride myself on the fact it was humorous because I'm like, hey, this can be fun. We're all going to have fun. God damn it. Yeah. That's the vibe.
Mandatory fun. We're studying politics and it's going to be fun.
You know what I'm imagining in my head when you say like we're digging, we're uncovering? I'm like, fossils. And we've got little gloves on.
Yeah.
And we've got little tiny paintbrushes and we're just dusting away the dust because it's already there. We're not digging. We're not shoveling. We're not plowing. We're not excavating. We're just dusting ever so lightly.
Yeah. But you thought you were just uncovering like one little leg bone and then you go over here and dust and there's a whole head part of the skeleton and you were just going to go over there and talk about the leg bone and you were nearly going to miss the really, really cool part.
Hey, there's a femur over here. Hey, there's a clavicle.
Can we just talk about the fossils reference? Anyone that knows Phineas and Ferb, we are massive fans of Phineas and Ferb. And do they go to a museum? It's the dad,
yeah,
isn't
they
it?
Go to a museum and the dad puts on the headset that you listen to like someone give you a tour and it's stuck on repeat. And so the whole time...
He's just really enjoying
it. No, it gets stuck on repeat,
I think. No, he's in bed and listening to it again. He really likes it.
But I think it starts by... I can't remember. Anyway, he just keeps replaying or it keeps getting stuck on the intro. And so he keeps listening and it just goes, fossils, dun, dun, dun.
And it goes, rewinds.
Fossils, dun, dun, dun. Fossils, dun, dun, dun.
But yeah, we just love it. And then recently in April this year, Sarah and I and our whole family went on a trip to the US. And in Vegas, we went into like an art exhibition. I think it was like the Titanic or something. And we got the headsets.
No, the bodies exhibition. Oh, no, we maybe had headsets for both.
We went into the Titanic and then one that was like the human body and we got headsets for both. And I've never done anything like that before. And I just like put my headphones on, grabbed the little like, you know, battery pack thingy that you clip to your pants. And I looked over to Sarah and I was just like, fossils.
Dun, 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 dun.
She immediately knew what I was talking about.
I kind of feel like Miss Ungermeyer from the Lizzie McGuire movie. Do you know that reference? You know, where she like has a headset and then also her little battery pack so that her voice is really loud so everyone could hear her. Yeah, I kind of felt like that. Well, everyone, that is our explainer on why we think you should spend some more thinking time instead of other parts of your prep. Let us know if this was helpful. Maybe you had a big light bulb moment while you're going through those questions at the end. Let us know how it impacted.
Good luck. Good luck out there.
Thanks so much for listening to Interview Boss. If you like hearing the sound of our voices, follow us on Spotify or Apple or wherever else you're listening. Or better yet, tell someone else about the show and help them do better in their interviews and get that new job. That's how we can hit the charts and we can help even more people all around the world and keep bringing you more incredible resources. For more advice, inspiration, and some savable, helpful tips, check us out on Instagram at Interview Boss or go follow me on LinkedIn.
We've been your job search besties and helped you in some way. There's a cool way you can support the show. Shout us a virtual coffee.
We get a huge kick out of reading all of your success stories. Head to buymeacoffee.com/interviewboss and shout us a cuppa.
If you keep us caffeinated, we can keep the content coming.